You are listening to On Further Review.
On Further Review is a conversation that uncovers the fascinating details of the most remarkable sporting events. Events you grew up watching and maybe a couple you've never heard of before.
Join our discussion of upsets, dynasties, and how one event can be the difference between being a footnote and being a legend. This is On Further Review. Welcome back to On Further Review. I am hosting this episode solo. Unfortunately, Micah wasn't able to hop on this specific episode with some busyness for him and his schedules and just kind of busyness around the holiday seasons here as well. But we did want to talk about something that was kind of specific to Thanksgiving NFL games. So I did want to kind of share with you some of the things in sports history around Thanksgiving that we had talked about and kind of done a little bit of research on. So bummed that Mike is not here, probably you more so than me, but wanted to at least talk about these Thanksgiving throwbacks, these games from NFL history of years gone by, centered around Thanksgiving games. And I want to say to anybody listening, I hope that you and yours have a wonderful Thanksgiving together. I know for myself personally, after last year, a lot of our plans were derailed, and I'm sure many people as well. It's just nice to be back together with family, surrounded by family and food and fun, whether it's board games or watching football or just catching up with cousins, aunts, uncles, you know, everybody that we haven't seen or maybe just FaceTimed or called or just to be in person. And shout out to all the family members I know for myself that I won't be able to see in person. And for those of you that, you know, maybe you're not able to see everybody, but just wonderful to have this opportunity to once again be back together with people and travel and, you know, be able to see family. And that's what these holidays are great for. I love the football part of it. I've always, you know, always been a kid that loved that part of it. And just, you know, the family as you get older and you kind of understand more of these things that really matter in life. Family, obviously being one of them, being able to get together with people. So wishing everybody a very happy Thanksgiving, wherever you may be and with your family, wherever you may be traveling, if you're making travel plans as well. Wanted to share, like I said, this episode with you. Maybe you can listen to it on your way to some family events or activities, or on the way back, keeping you awake from the food coma that comes from Thanksgiving Day feast. And excited though, you know, once we're able to kind of get back into it as well, want to kind of talk about some of the things that are going on in sports, you know, right now. Obviously, going to be talking about NFL here today, but the NFL is in full swing and we just kind of have so much sports that it'll be fun when Micah's back and we're able to jointly do this again, just to be able to kind of break down some of our takes and some of his input and insights into some of the current events and sports going on right now. But wanted to take this episode and look back on Further Review here at some Thanksgiving games, some Thanksgiving NFL games, and kind of dive into that a little bit. So let's look back and see Thanksgiving games. We know for as long as I've been alive, for as long as probably anybody's been alive that's listening to this, there's always been two teams that always play on Thanksgiving. The Lions have a home game and the Cowboys have a home game. And like I kind of alluded to, in 2006, I believe it was, they added a primetime game like the Saints-Bills here this year. I wanted to look back and see, like, when did this start? Why did this start? How did people start playing on Thanksgiving? I know there's some high schools football that still play either on Thanksgiving or the day after. Football's always kind of been a a theme for Thanksgiving. And there have been plenty of teams that have actually played on Thanksgiving, but not with the same consistency and not with the same, you know, fanfare as the Lions and the Cowboys on Thanksgiving. So this actually started in 1934 for the Lions. Their owner, who is George Richards, he wanted to draw in more fans. And so his idea was, let's have a game that's not competing with anything else, not competing with the Detroit Tigers or any other, you know, professional team. And we can sell out games. We can get more fans interested. We can get people interested in this football team. And it worked. They wound up selling out games almost immediately on having these Thanksgiving games. They were turning people away. But the reason for the Lions, and I think why it stayed till today, is George Richards was also an owner of a local NBC affiliate. And he wound up working out a deal with the NBC, you know, higher ups or brass or whatever, to broadcast his games, his Lions games, over about 94 stations. Like I said, other teams had played on Thanksgiving, but that NBC deal really is what made it not only take off, but I think continue. So it was for the publicity of bringing in more fans. He wound up parlaying that right into this broadcast deal. So now everybody, or at least a lot more people, were watching the Lions on Thanksgiving, not just the people coming into the stadium. Genius move by him, like to have this foresight to take this day that he knew he could draw, you know, more people into his games, more interest in his games. Similarly, in 1966, the GM for the Dallas Cowboys, Tex Scram, he wanted to help his team get more, you know, national publicity. At that point, it wasn't so much like the Lions to bring in fans to the stadium as it was to get eyeballs on a TV screen watching the Dallas Cowboys. Again, that worked. So 1934 started for the Lions. They've been playing Thanksgiving games, I think, except for a brief period around World War II, for obvious reasons. And the Cowboys since 1966, and I think they had one or two, maybe a couple more years where I think the NFL tried to have the St. Louis team play and some other teams there. But pretty much those have been the consistent teams that we watch on Thanksgiving. The Lions usually in the early game, and the Cowboys in the afternoon, and then now a primetime game as well. So that's just a brief history of how these Thanksgiving games came to be. If you've always wondered, why do the Lions always play? Why do the Cowboys always play? That's kind of your, you know, synopsis of an answer. It really was to get you to watch. So if you were watching the Lions and you were watching the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day, it worked. That's all I can say. It worked for them. And it continues to work because we all sit around and we all watch these teams, and they get that national spotlight, similar to kind of like how teams, everybody watches Monday night, right? Like I'm talking about like other NFL teams, other NFL players, athletes. They don't have a game going on, so they can watch. It's just a great ploy, really, a great idea for bringing in more fans, bringing in more eyeballs now in the television age. So that's the Lions and the Cowboys getting their start and why they continue on to today. The specific game or year that I wanted to talk about here on this episode actually occurs in 1998, the Thanksgiving games. And I kind of want to talk about both teams, the Lions and the Cowboys, that played that year, because both games had really intriguing, fascinating storylines, or just significance within the NFL as we know it today. It's odd, or kind of funny to me, as I was looking for different, you know, like looking at Thanksgiving games, I thought of at least one of these, and then looking at, oh, who else played, you know, just that both games on this Thanksgiving Day in 1998, both games had kind of a mark on NFL history, as it were. So the first game I want to bring up is the 1998 Thanksgiving game between the Minnesota Vikings and the Dallas Cowboys. The Vikings that year, for those who might not remember or come to the top of your head, when I say the 1998 year, the Vikings that year were 10-1 coming into this Thanksgiving game. They had a quarterback named Randall Cunningham who had come to their team. They had, obviously, Chris Carter, Robert Smith as legends for the Minnesota Vikings. And the Cowboys, you know, were always a team that was to be reckoned with in the 90s. They had Troy Aikman, still had Emmitt Smith, a good offense. You know, they were what dubbed themselves America's team and had all the success, obviously, in the early 1990s. But again, this is their game, their Thanksgiving hosting game. So they have the Vikings come in. That's who they're facing as a visitor. And, the Vikings had a player who will kind of be the main storyline in this game, who was a rookie that year, a man by the name of Randy Moss. So just kind of a brief breakdown of this game, and it's really fun to watch, kind of ahead of its time, as it were, for some just offensive fireworks, and really a tribute to the offensive players. As I mentioned, specifically on the Vikings side of it, they bring a 10-1 record, you know, into this game. This is also the year that they wind up going on to a 15-1 season and lose to the Atlanta Falcons in what a lot of people have called like the kick game, which was the Andersons, Morton, and Gary Anderson, I believe, is who the kickers were. And it went to overtime, and Atlanta winds up obviously making the game-winning kick. I think the Vikings kicker had like not missed at all the entire year, wound up missing a game. I remember listening to that game on the radio with my dad, thinking, you know, this rival of the Minnesota Vikings was going to go to the Super Bowl. I've only felt that way twice in my life, that game and the Bounty Gate game of the Vikings against the Saints. And so, you know, you're a little more intrigued because it's a team from your division. But, you know, in the NFL, you don't really cheer for your division like you might in college for your conference or stuff like that. So I remember just that Vikings season specifically. And this game was kind of a turning point for that team. Not a turning point from their record or their wins or losses. Obviously, they only had one loss before that NFC Championship game as a whole. But just something that cemented just how potent and viable this offense was. And specifically, as I mentioned, this rookie, you know, coming out of Marshall named Randy Moss. On the fourth play of this game, Cunningham hands off to Robert Smith, the running back from Minnesota. They fake a run. They toss it back to Cunningham. And he throws a bomb to Randy Moss, who is behind the defense. He winds up making it in the end zone, 51-yard touchdown. Fourth play of the game, Vikings just electrifying touchdown there in Dallas. Later in the first quarter, Moss catches another bomb, about a 56-yard go route, just takes off. Again, if you go and look on YouTube, you can find, you know, Randy Moss Vikings game, Randy Moss Thanksgiving game, you know, Vikings Cowboys 98, however you want to look it up. And you can see these, you know, you can either see the game in whole or even just some of these highlights. Cunningham throws some pretty impressive deep passes, but all of them are underthrown because Moss is just so far down the field. Just his incredible length, his incredible athleticism, on full display. So one quarter in, he's got a 51-yard touchdown, 56-yard go route for a touchdown as well. The rest of the game kind of plays out, both teams trading scores. I think Aikman had a TD pass. Emmitt Smith has a rushing touchdown. Vikings, you know, I think kick a couple field goals. Then we get to the third quarter when Moss winds up scoring on another electrifying 56-yard touchdown. He catches a ball kind of on the left side of the field, starts taking down. He's got a really nifty move in there where he kind of fakes like he's cutting back into the field. Instead, stays on the sideline and goes the distance there. And he really, you know, the Vikings obviously blow this game wide open. Emmitt Smith adds a couple more touchdown runs. Vikings had a huge run as well. I think it was about a 50-yard touchdown run from Huard. And they wind up cruising to a 46-36 Vikings win. The reason why, to me, this is an interesting game is, again, it just cements Randy Moss as, not just a dude, not just a draft pick, but a guy who is just something really special. Again, one little fun fact about this game, the Dallas defensive backs coach was a man by the name of Mike Zimmer, now head coach for the Minnesota Vikings. And he was asked about this game. I don't know in the moment. I believe it was many years later. And he said about Randy Moss, his size, length, and athleticism was unbelievable. You had to double team him, but that left other areas like Robert Smith and Chris Carter open. If you didn't pay attention to him, he beat you in a hurry. And that's a very good synopsis of this game, because speaking of a hurry, Moss's official stat line for this game, again, as a rookie, 3 receptions, 163 yards, 3 touchdowns. Randy Moss literally catches 3 passes and makes all of them touchdowns. The longest of Minnesota's drives that entire game only took about 2 minutes, 2.5. The longest of their touchdown drives, that is, only took about 2 to 2.5 minutes. In today's vernacular, the only way to describe it would be Cowboys, you got mossed, right? It would show up just those 3 catches. He wasn't necessarily doing the over the back or the type of catches that get labeled in that segment now on Monday Night Football, you got mossed. But he showed just what a freak of nature he was. What an incredible athlete. It's kind of comical. I do encourage you to go back and try to find some of these clips or at least the highlights of Moss's day. It's comical because he's so long. He's so tall. He's so athletic. Like when he's running on the field, even compared to the other defenders or players around him, he's just galloping down the field. It's quite remarkable. And again, this is at this point in NFL history, we didn't know Randy Moss to be what he is today and what we think of him now. This was kind of not the start per se, because he had played previous, but just the real like initial beginning point of his incredible display and putting him on the map as not just a good addition to this Vikings team, but somebody that was special in and of his own right. YouTube clip that I looked up is literally called "The Game That Made Randy Moss a Legend." So that's one of the games. It would have been the second game in 1998 for Thanksgiving games. But again, like these games are, you know, kind of national TV and a huge spotlight. Obviously, we talked about the history of it, the Cowboys and the Lions choosing to want that spotlight. In this specific instance, you know, the Vikings and Randy Moss taking the shine from the Cowboys, but just all the people that would see this game and see this guy go 3 for 3 basically on receptions of touchdowns and all of them over 50 yards. Just quite remarkable. And this team was incredible, very special. That Vikings team again lost a heartbreaker in the NFC Championship. If you're a Vikings fan or wanted to see them win, I think there was an interview done recently I heard with Terrell Davis, and he was kind of admitting he obviously on the Broncos that year and they get to the Super Bowl and demolish Atlanta. But he was kind of admitting that they played their game after the Atlanta Vikings game and they were all cheering in the locker room when Atlanta made the kick to win the game. Just one of those things of, I think he said, you know, nobody ever picks the path of most resistance. You want the paths of least resistance. So they were excited to not have to play Randall Cunningham, CC, and Randy Moss type of offense coming from Minnesota that year. They were just something special. So that was one of the games here from 1998, Thanksgiving Day. That was actually the second game. So as long as I can remember, and I think for much of the history of these games, the Lions always play the early game and the Cowboys play kind of that afternoon game, the couch lock game where we're all kind of settled in and bellies full there. But the early game in 1998 was between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Detroit Lions. Jerome Bettis is kind of the main focal point of any history around this game. It's a game that has been referred to, and I like to refer to it as well, as the coin toss game. And that's kind of the biggest story or memory from this game in 1998 is that coin toss, and we'll get into that. But this featured, you know, two teams, kind of the Lions not so much, but definitely the Steelers, you know, kind of fighting for playoff seeding and spots there that year. Two incredible backs in Barry Sanders. I believe this is Barry Sanders' last Thanksgiving game. And then, as I mentioned, Jerome Bettis on the Steelers side of things as well. So good run games. The quarterbacks for this game were Cordell Stewart and Charlie Batch. Charlie Batch actually for the Lions. Some of you may remember he also spent time in Pittsburgh as well. But those are kind of the names that might drum up a little nostalgia for you between Cordell Stewart and Jerome Bettis in the backfield, Charlie Batch, obviously Barry Sanders, the legend for the Lions. These are the teams coming into play again in that early game in 1998 on Thanksgiving Day. Kind of a unimpressive, unimaginative, if you will, in a opposition to the game we talked about first, which actually came after, if that's not confusing, you know, the fireworks of offense. This game lacked most of that. The game actually comes down to a kind of a late touchdown drive, or a late drive rather, that Cordell Stewart leads the Pittsburgh Steelers on. He gets them down there to set up a field goal. They make it with 1 second left, and that stops, you know, ends the game in regulation at 16-16. So again, a far cry from the game that would follow in 46-36 between the Vikings and the Cowboys. But this is a 16-16 just kind of battle, kind of one of the, it feels like always that early game too. Maybe it's the Lions, maybe they bring that out in people, but it always seems like that one's kind of either a slugfest or just kind of sloppy a little bit. The appetizer of Thanksgiving games, as I've heard it called, which is an apt analogy for that Lions game oftentimes. So this one's kind of just, like I said, not a lot of scoring. There was that excitement at the end where the Steelers drive down and set up a Norm Johnson field goal with 1 second left to tie this baby up at 16 apiece in regulation. And that's where this game truly gets its historical spot in NFL history. Maybe you've heard of it. Maybe you remember it. Maybe you don't know a thing about it. Or why is it called the coin toss game? Well, it comes down to the most controversial part of this entire game, this entire year, really. Even with the Randy Moss explosion afterwards, this is the game everybody's talking about from Thanksgiving 1998 because of the coin toss that comes after regulation. So you all are probably sports fans, football fans, you know, the overtime rules, and it's always a question of like, well, in college, it's this way in football, and the pros, it's this way. The pros have kind of, you know, changed theirs. At this current time in NFL history, it's a sudden death overtime. So first team to score wins the game and it's done. So they you know, meet at the, you know, that midfield there. They've got the captains from both teams there. I know it was Jerome Bettis because he's at the center of all this. And I think it was Cardell Lake, I think, was the Steelers defensive captain. So they come to the field, and the head referee there is a gentleman by the name of Phil Luckett. Probably, again, an NFL referee you've probably never heard of, or maybe you remember all the fallout from this game and his name being brought up, I'm sure, a ton then. But he was an NFL ref from 1991 to 2005. He took a year off. Then he had 2007 as well. He retires in 2007 and winds up going and working in the league officiating office as well. I'll talk a little bit about his his track record or his moments in NFL history a little later, but he's the head of referee for this game in 1998. Goes to overtime. He's got the coin ready. We're going to do the coin toss. Why is this known as the coin toss game? Well, when the coin toss is happening, Jerome Bettis seems to call heads, and As Phil Luckett, the referee, bends down and grabs the coin off of the field, he announces it's tails and it's Detroit's ball. Bettis is beside himself. What happens in the actual, you know, the actual game itself is Detroit gets the ball and 3 minutes into overtime, Jason Hansen kicks a 42-yard game-winning field goal again under that sudden death format. So the other team doesn't get another chance. And the Lions wind up winning the game 19-16. During this game is really interesting. Again, there's so many good places you can go. I know I reference YouTube a lot to try to go and look at this, but wanted to get into like the actual thing about the coin toss. So Bettis is completely upset, thinking that they got screwed. The Steeler fans are all, we got screwed. You know, it's the lead story of the next day of NFL or sports reporting and media. Even during the broadcast of the game, which was done by CBS, and the crew in the booth, I think was Greg Gumbel and Phil Sims. They both think and even say in the broadcast that they thought that Bettis called tails. So as this launches into, you know, a bit of an investigation of what's going on, Phil Luckett has to answer for his, you know, role in this. You know, Bettis is obviously asked about it. Bettis is asked about it even, you know, until fairly recently, and he still claims that, you know, that it wasn't right, that what he called was tails. What Luckett says in, you know, in his review of this game, and what's later kind of the NFL's official stance on the whole thing, is that what Bettis actually said was tails. So he starts saying heads when the coin's tossed in the air and changes it, you know, kind of mid-toss, mid-roll to tails. Luckett said that he chose heads for Bettis's call. Because, and it's true, per officiating rules, you go with the first thing said. And because Bettis kind of led into that, Bettis called that BS right away, you know, kind of in the aftermath of this. But that's what Luckett's saying. So you have this conflicting report even well after the game. Obviously, there's the confusion, the chaos in the game when Bettis thinks he called tails. And Luckett's, you know, grabbing the coin, saying it's tails and it's Detroit's ball. Bettis is sitting there going, I called tails. What are you talking about? And, you know, this kind of follows into the post game. It follows into the next day. There's actually a few days later that a Pittsburgh radio station had, quote unquote, enhanced audio showing Bettis gave the two commands of head tails, basically, as he's changing it kind of mid-toss, that the NFL kind of championed it as this, you know, enhanced audio that their guy made the right decision and, you know, all this. But it does wind up coming down to cost the Steelers that loss, obviously. And, I mean, they go on and lose, I think, the remaining four games of their season. The Lions do the same as well. Neither team makes the playoffs for their respective conferences. But this is the game where, like, again, it's not that exciting of a game, but this controversy around it, it's pretty incredible. And if you listen to the, you know, to the live game broadcast, you pick up his tails, because again, he led with that tails, kind of changed it. And so what you kind of pick up in the live feed as it runs real time is tails. So it's incredibly confusing, both for, you know, everyone as the viewer, for the Steelers, for Jerome Bettis, you know, what's going on. Obviously the Lions are the beneficiary of this and they go down and wind up winning the game on the field themselves. But just this, you know, this controversy about this tails thing, I think oftentimes of the, just the situation of today and the way that sports media is handles all the events of sports and the scrutiny and the microscopes. And it just seems like there's so many things that when we go back in history and look at, this is one of them. I know that this was a big deal, you know, in the moment, but just thinking about what it would be like today, you know, Stephen A on First Take talking about this, everybody from CBS Sports to NFL Network Good Morning Football to Skip and Shannon to, you know, any pundit anywhere would have some opinion on this. We'd be looking at, you know, five different videos that somebody posted on Twitter showing different angles clipped together, you know, like just all the chaos that comes from today and what this would look like if it transpired today. But it was still all of that, you know, but back in a time in NFL history where there wasn't, you know, there just wasn't the advances of the checks and balances for referees. And it's interesting to me because, you know, today a lot of people wonder, you know, instant replay and things like that. Does this work? Phil Luckett, this NFL ref, I'll get into that here in a second, but he actually has a hand in helping institute instant replay and a hand in a couple other things, or at least involvement around a couple other things that led to NFL changes. One of the things that leads to a change in this game or because of this is that now whenever they flip a coin for overtime, the captains are required to announce it before the coin is flipped. So again, it's probably something you've never even really took stock of. I know I really haven't always given it much thought as far as the whole actual you know, procedure of how these coin tosses are done. But this was something that wound up changing because of this debacle, because of this, you know, two-tone type of answer from Jerome Bettis. And it really depends on which way, you know, you look at it. I'm sure there's probably still Steeler fans today that feel like they got absolutely robbed, you know, because of this. But to me, I don't know. I seldom take a referee side. To me, in this instance, it is kind of a tough thing. And it is, I probably wasn't intentional, but it is something where he gave both answers. It kind of reminds me of, you know, you're playing maybe as a kid or something as menial as playing rock, paper, scissors. And there's always the kid that had like his hand in a fist and then he lays it out when he sees your fist, or he's, you know, about to do paper and he quick goes to rock because he sees he's got scissors. Like, that's what I think personally of the way Bettis handled it, was he kind of had an out either way, or he could be upset either way because he kind of called both. But whether you're on that side or whether you're on the side of Bettis saying, you know, we got screwed, either way, this led to change. And it led to that change where captains have to clearly announce before the coin is tossed, you know, so that it's clear and there's not this hiccup, there's not this issue. That all stemmed from this 1998 Thanksgiving game, which Jerome Bettis, this 16-16 draw that went to overtime. And it's one of those things where, you know, a rule was changed or a rule was put in place, or not put in place, but modified as a result of kind of a one-off. Like, this system had worked well for them for so long in the, you know, no issues whatsoever with the way they've done the coin toss and the way they've done it. But this specific instance winds up changing a rule. And that's just always fascinating to me, how something like this on a Thanksgiving morning or Thanksgiving early game between the Lions and the Steelers, you know, games that we might not otherwise think anything of years later, actually had an impact on what we know of football today in the officiating, in the rule books. And that's incredibly, incredibly interesting to me. So like I said, the highlight or low light, depending on how you want to look at it, is the actual coin toss. It needs to be stated, you know, congrats to Detroit to go out and win the game there after all of that. But just kind of funny how this one instance and this one decision by Bettis to kind of call both winds up leading to a complete rule change for how overtime is handled, you know, how the actual coin toss is handled, let alone the play on the field. And I mentioned with Phil Luckett, the official for this, he winds up the very next week, he and his crew are doing a game between the New York Jets and the Seattle Seahawks, and they give quarterback Vinny Testaverde, he takes a QB sneak and goes into the end zone And they rule it a touchdown. And the TV replay, as the TV is kind of showing viewers, you know, the replay of what happened, clearly show him stopping short. But obviously the crew getting, you know, signaled touchdown. So the touchdown was what went on. That touchdown wound up giving the Jets the win and the Seahawks a loss, which actually factored into Seattle missing the playoffs that year. The very next year, instant replay was initiated in large part, if not major part, to that game done by Phil Luckett's crew as well. So these guys are on a roll. Like the Thanksgiving 1998 game, they helped change the coin toss and how that procedure is done. The next week, they incorrectly give a touchdown away and or give it to the Jets, and it costs Seattle, you know, a playoff spot in the long run, and instant replay is instituted. So you know, if you've ever been worried about coin tosses going wrong or instant replay not being a factor into officiating, you have Phil Luckett to appreciate for those things. Now, I understand a lot of stuff still today, people have issues. You go to instant replay. You think, how could you look at this for what feels like 17 minutes and still get it wrong? Or what is a catch? Or did he lead with the crown of his helmet? Was the side of his helmet? Was, you know, just all these different, you know, minute details that we all, you know, split hairs over, or the difference between something shown in real time versus slow-mo. That one always gets me because, you know, slow-mo can be helpful. I think it's very helpful for things like, did he drag his toe? Did you see the turf pellets come up? Did he get both feet in bounds? Did he, you know, did the ball come out before the knee hit the ground on a fumble? Those types of things. You know, some of the other things, sometimes we get too bogged down, my personal opinion, sometimes we get too bogged down into the instant replays in sports. But I, for one, am grateful that we have them, you know, and this crew is someone that or a group of people that helped bring that to be. The other interesting fact I found out about Phil Luckett was he retired from the NFL officiating on the field in 2007. But he was actually a league supervisor assigned to a game that transpired in 2012 between the Green Bay Packers and the Seattle Seahawks, a game that is known as the Fail Mary game. And I don't know his exact involvement, but it is listed that he was a league supervisor, whatever that means, assigned to that game that ended in that touchdown for Seattle. That was that to this day, interception in my book. I absolutely believe that, but also led to a change in the sense that it led to the end, or helped speed up the end of the 2012 NFL referee lockout. You know, and he, again, I don't know the exact involvement of this referee, Phil Luckett, in that specific instance. All I know is that, you know, with some of the research I was doing, he was tied to it very, very loosely, you know, as having been possibly assigned to it as part of the league office. One other little game in memory that he was a part of, he helped officiate the game that is the Music City Miracle game. If you remember that one, Tennessee Titans versus the Bills, they looked at it and decided to uphold the ruling that it was a lateral and not a forward pass between Wycheck and Dyson, which led to that miraculous kick return touchdown for the Tennessee Titans against the Buffalo Bills. So he's got a hand in the Testaverde game that leads to instant replay, the Music City Miracle game, very loose ties to the Fail Mary game. But then again, this game here and Thanksgiving in 1998 with Jerome Bettis and this coin toss. It's weird. It's very, very, very strange course of events for that Pittsburgh Lions game where where the coin toss rule had to be adjusted. You know, never thought we were going to need to adjust when you call heads or tails or how you do that. It was something that worked forever. And to be honest, even today, I'm not sure how you get it, how you mess that up, but we did have this instance which led to a minor change with that. Other notes on this game. Again, I think I mentioned Barry Sanders' final Thanksgiving game in 1998 for the Detroit Lions. He would retire in the next year. He didn't have a great game. He had 20 carries, 33 yards, somewhere in that range. So the Steelers held him in check. As I mentioned, it was a 16-16 tie at the end of regulation. So neither offense was spectacular. But Barry Sanders, a legend in Detroit, many Thanksgiving games, many memorable ones. Many times he ran all over my Green Bay Packers, as well as any team he played. Just a phenomenal back. And this being his last, you know, Thanksgiving game for his Detroit Lions. And again, the other interesting note to me was the Cordell Stewart, Charlie Batch having a little bit of crossover between the two organizations. So that's kind of a brief synopsis of 1998. That just two really incredible games when you look back on sports history. Obviously, this coin toss game kind of being to me the most remarkable of this year for Thanksgiving games, just because of that controversy, just because of that being such a big deal, and kind of overshadowing, and again in sports media the next day, overshadowing the talk, even though the next game, Randy Moss did what he did. My question, and I didn't bring this up with the Vikings Cowboys recap. My question about Randy Moss's stat line is, why did they only throw to him three times? You know, I know they had a prolific offense. I've always, even as a Packer fan, I've always thought the world of guys like Chris Carter, or I always enjoyed watching Randall Cunningham play as well. But that year was something special, and to have that type of game to really cement yourself, as Randy Moss did in that Thanksgiving game against the Cowboys, just incredible. I can't imagine having that type of output today and not throwing to him more than three times. He literally took all three catches to the house. Sometimes dragging defenders with him, with his strength. Sometimes just putting on the jets or the slick moves to make it there. Randy Moss, just a legend in his own right for sure. So that's my synopsis of the 1998 Thanksgiving games that I wanted to talk about today. On further review here, just something to maybe pique your interest and go back in time for Thanksgivings of years gone by. Maybe you remember these games, maybe it's new to you, but either way, just kind of fun to look back on the games that were here for Thanksgiving between these two teams, and kind of, as I mentioned at the top and throughout, games that left their mark, you know, on NFL history, whether it be on the officiating side, or even just the players that we still acknowledge today as some of the best to ever do it. And I certainly put Randy Moss in that category for a wide receiver for sure. Just kind of fun looking back, and one thing again that's so fun is to be able to go back and find, whether it's a 14-minute clip or, you know, a 3-minute clip or full game rewatch of these games and see them. One other side note that always blows my mind is you go back and watch some of these games. I may have talked about it before, since what we do is go back and watch these games on further review. But just the TV and video quality is always fascinating to me. And I'm guilty. I know I'm going to sound a little old, but I'm guilty of thinking 1998 wasn't that long ago. So that kind of leads into it as well. I understand that it's quite a few years back now. But just the difference in, in, you know, a game, watching that game and even some of the instant replays and the stuff they have nowadays where you feel like you're there or in some sort of virtual reality with some of the cameras they have set up, I think, especially of some of these new stadiums, SoFi and even Jerry World, some other ones. But I think it's kind of become standard across the NFL to have that end zone camera that just, it's like crystal clear. And it either feels like a, to me, it feels like a video game or VR or something. It's just so clear. And so like live, if that makes sense, but compared to kind of the more grainy footage of some of the 98 stuff that even when you're watching a broadcast on YouTube, it feels like you're watching a VHS tape. It's just kind of always funny to me. But as we take this episode to look back at Thanksgiving games, you know, from the past, I encourage you too to think about Thanksgivings both from the past and the present, with you and your family. I get such a joy out of and really am thankful for how much I enjoy sports. It seems like a silly thing to be thankful, but you can't convince me that you could ever be too thankful. I don't think there is a point where you're like, hey, just stop being thankful. We don't do it enough. I don't do it enough as a person. And to have this season in life where we're kind of forced to do so, we're, you know, thinking about Thanksgiving, you know, really think about that. As we talk about Thanksgiving's gone by, I think of Thanksgiving's, you know, the family and the memories and the moments, not necessarily just the sporting events, of years gone by. I think of all the family that I love being around today, all the family that I miss. You know, that we used to have around that maybe we don't anymore. And it just leads me, and I hope it does for you, to be thankful for all the things we have in life, but especially the things that really matter. Spoiler alert, not the Thanksgiving football games, but the family and the people that we love and that love us, and just how truly blessed we all are. On behalf of On Further Review, myself, and I know Micah as well, I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. And thank you all for listening to this. And I hope you have a wonderful time or have had a wonderful time with your family, remembering all that we are thankful for.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and share it with someone. If you didn't enjoy it, let someone know. Either way, smash that share button.